Hello, my name is Rachel Dugan, and my favorite thing is butts.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. It's Monday, July 17th. I had such good intentions of getting this to you on Sunday, but I spent the weekend living at the Palmer House Hilton and officiating the wedding of one of my very best friends, Dahlia, to her now husband, Josh. So I was celebrating and officiating and dancing all weekend. Last summer, I went to a wedding in Ohio, and I was so happy for the couple, but really sad for myself because it's when I was had to use my cane for every step of the day, and I couldn't dance at their wedding. I danced like briefly one song with my friend Brian at that wedding, and it was a bummer. And this year, to be a year later, to be able to stand for 30 minutes through the whole ceremony and then to dance a number of songs. I didn't dance the whole night. Can't still safely dance the Hora. But to be able to dance to Groove Is in the Heart with my friends and celebrate a wonderful union was really great. Next weekend, July 20, 21, and 22 in Chicago, the inaugural Chicago Jewish Book Festival. Stacey Agdern, who you've met on the podcast, is coming up to Chicago to talk about joyfully Jewish romance books, making space for that. She'll also be going Friday night down to Love Sweet Arrow. So if you are a Chicagoland romance fan, Stacey Agdern is in town doing two events. We're very excited for that. Jonathan Eig is our keynote on Saturday night. He has a new biography out about MLK. I'll be interviewing Bindi Bitterman for a live episode of Finding Favorites. So I hope that people in Chicago can come and join us. If you're not in Chicago, join us next year for the second annual Chicago Jewish Book Fest. And then a couple days after that, I leave for Israel. So I will not promise any episodes while I'm gone. If I can come up with one to get out there, if I'm able to edit quickly my live episode next weekend, you'll have one more before I go on vacation. But otherwise, I'm going to let myself take the break, and we'll be back to you in August. When I come back from Israel, I'm interviewing, I've got three interviews lined up. Dan O'Brien, he's a poet and playwright, I'll be jet lagged, but I'm interviewing him on August 7th. So he'll be one of my first interviews back. And then a couple more people are on the schedule as well. In this episode, once again, I tell my sister and I eating mushrooms that weren't. I tell the poisonous mushroom story again on this episode. Mom fact checked me last time and said that she did indeed call poison control. And that's how she knew to go get syrup of ipecac for us. She does not believe me that it was cinnamon gummy bears. She thinks we were eating goldfish and goldfish crackers. She double fact checked me, were invented in 1953, but I really remember those red gummy bears going down and coming back up. So with all that said, a wonderful interview this week with illustrator Rachel Dugan. She's the author of the book, All Butts Are Good Butts. And we have a fun and wide-ranging conversation about finding beautiful things out in the world. So without further ado, get your boosters, wash your hands, wear your mask, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites, the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. I am here today with illustrator Rachel Dugan. Rachel is the author of the new book, All Butts Are Good Butts, which launched last month and is available on all of your favorite book retailers. We'll link to it in the show notes. She is an illustrator based in Milwaukee. You can hire her to come to your wedding and draw booty portraits, which I cannot wait to learn more about. Rachel, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. We had a little bit of cowboy, my cat-infused drama at the kickoff where he always comes to visit during a podcast, and this time he knocked my water over onto my work computer, but all seems dry. So that was like equivalent to 5 cups of coffee. So your book, All Butts Are Good Butts, came out, I think, was it earlier in June or in May?
It was in early May.
How did, I assume you've been interviewed about this every time, but how did you come to be the booty portrait illustrator?
That's, I mean, it's a good question because even when asked, it's hard to remember. It's hard to think back to that pivotal moment where things mm-hmm. changed and that became my thing. But many, many years ago, probably close to 10 years ago, I was living in Chicago and I had a full-time job, but I really loved drawing and I went to art school for drawing. And mm-hmm. I started just telling people I could do things, and that included, yeah. Hey, can I pop up in your space and draw people? And I did like paranormal portraits where I drew people as aliens. Sorry, my dog just scratched her eyeball and I'm like, no, because she's had a cornea issue. And I'm like, for the love of God, dog. Something's wrong. Something's going on with the pets today, I think.
There is some. I'll check the astrology when we hang up. Something is certainly in the air.
So, yes, going back many years ago, I just pitched myself to do weird things, including drawing butts. Like at the time, I was like drawing my friends and family, pet butts, that sort of thing. And I would mm-hmm. post them online and through people. I mean, this is like early days Instagram. People were like, I love this, or this is a fun idea, or would you do me? How would this work? So then I started going out into the wild and doing it at events. And the response was so positive that mm-hmm. I felt like, okay, I think I'm onto something here. I think people like this, so I should continue to do it and get better at it. And so then fast forward to now. That's, what people mostly know me as, and I'm more than a butt, but I do love butts, so it works out well.
And All Butts Are Good Butts. Celebrate your derriere with booty affirmations, astrology, tushy trivia, and much more. Embrace your behind, flaws, farts, and all, with historical heinies, celebrity cabooses, seat self-care, and more fun facts in this little book of booty body acceptance. How has the reception been?
It's been really good. I'll say this is the first time I've ever made a book or published a book. So for me, just having it happen, like the whole time I was pinching myself, kind of like, this might not work out, or they might not actually print the book. You never know. Yeah. So the fact that it is real and it has come full circle to where books are for sale wherever, and I've been able to physically, hold my books and go to a bookshop and see my book. Mm-hmm. It's just such a cool feeling. It's a surreal feeling. And, Most of the response that I've seen is positive. I've had a few people who are like, this isn't for kids. And I'm like, it's a book that I drew with a few swear words in there. So,
right.
But then other people are like, my kids love it. So
Yeah.
It's been an interesting ride. That's for sure.
Nice. Were you able to have, any in-person book launches or Zoom, like virtual book launches to celebrate the launch?
Yes. Yeah. I had a local party and here in Milwaukee at an indie bookshop called Lion's Tooth Bookstore. And they're awesome. It's like a great comics bookstore. It's owned by two women. And I didn't know what to expect with that either, having done so many events, but never doing anything book related. But it was so much fun. It was awesome. It was so cool to see people show up and want to pick up a copy of the book. We did a quick Q&A, which was nice. And family and friends came out from Chicago and Madison. And it was just an awesome way to kind of close the chapter. Not close it, but it kind of like the cherry on top. And then the book will just continue on in the world, however it will.
Yeah. How long did it, from initial concept and pitching to publication, was that like a 2 year, a 5 year? What was that process for you?
I am still shocked by how it all came together. So I actually did not have a pitch for this book. I didn't have anything drafted. I was approached by a publisher because they saw someone else's TikTok about me. I didn't post. Yeah, the power of the internet, you know, like I like to dog on the internet quite a bit, but there have been some really magical moments that have occurred that were, totally out of my hands, because I happened to be at an event where an influencer from DC was in town and then shot videos of me drawing, and I had no idea at the time, like, that they were going to post it or what.
Sure.
And it, on TikTok, it ended up going viral, like 4 million views. I woke up with like my phone on fire. I was just like, whoa, who is this person? I didn't post anything. Like, what's happening? And a bunch of sales on my shop, which was so cool. And then, a publisher contacted me and I thought, this is spam. This is a fake email.
Right.
but they were like, we want to have a meeting with you and like talk to you about like any ideas you could have or would have for a book. And so I took the meeting and they were like, we loved what we saw of what you do on TikTok. Would you be willing to do a book about butts? And I was like, sure. And so fortunately, I have such a long history of drawing butts and like butt related content. So
yeah,
I was able to very easily pull from that and like have an idea from where to start, how to like, you know, go through different sections of the book and like new drawings, old drawings, just kind of piecing it together. So I only had five and a half months to complete the book.
Whoa.
Yes, yeah. And so
talk about adrenaline.
Yes, especially because I already had like a ton of weddings booked. I had my summer events booked. I had workshops. Right. It wasn't like, oh, in the future, I'm going to do this, so I'm going to block off time. Like, I had already committed to a lot of stuff. So I created the book while being incredibly busy at work, which I do not recommend. I definitely had plenty of nervous breakdowns, just feeling overwhelmed by commitments. But it was a good learning lesson of just like, but the opportunity came and I wasn't going to say no. So it was all worth it in the end, but it was a roller coaster creating that in a small amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine how draining it is, because your workshops and pop-ups and weddings are, you're not sitting behind a table selling your merchandise. You are actively drawing or teaching or leading.
Yeah.
It's you're in a much more active role for everything you sell, right? You're not selling postcards at a craft show.
Yes. Thank you for saying that, because sometimes I feel like, wow, man, what's wrong with me? Why can't I handle this better? Why can't I manage? But it is like that where, you know, I have in the past, before I started doing live drawing, I would just have my merchandise laid out and I would sit back and doodle to myself. And if someone wanted to buy something, run the transaction. And
right.
But it's a totally different ball game where I'm performing. It feels very performative. I'm also right. an introvert, so I have to really put on like my act, not acting. It sounds bad to say acting, but you know, I have to really like psych myself out to feel comfortable being on for so long and making sure people are feeling like good and excited and noticed and keep the train moving forward. Yeah, it's a big undertaking for me mentally and physically.
Yeah.
And that's why I typically do it for like short amounts of time, because it's like such a burst of energy.
Yeah. I am also an introvert who had a facilitation business.
Okay.
So I would go in and I'd facilitate a workshop or for 1 or 2 days. And then I would need to lay on the couch for 1 or 2 days, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Because you're like you're taking in all this information from people, you're synthesizing, you're like moving everybody along. And I enjoy facilitation because I'm good at it, but also I like being in a group where I have a defined role.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being the person who draws butts at a party, fantastic. Like you have your conversation is already started. You don't have to do small talk. You don't like the introduction is there. The reason is there.
Yeah.
But I can just imagine the end of the night. I would just want to lie on my couch and scroll TikTok for 2 hours or seven.
Yes. Yeah, totally. You get it. You so get it. Yeah. Yeah. It is just like that. Or I'm like, I just can't talk for a few hours, or like the next day I can't be around people. I just need to really decompress.
Yeah. So I'm curious, when somebody hires you for a wedding, are you like clipboard in hand mingling, or do people, are you at a station and people come to you and you draw and pass out the illustrations?
Yeah, I'm in a station. I basically have my spot. I have a very minimal display, but I have signage, and sometimes guests know that I'm going to be there, and mm-hmm. other times people have no idea and are just like, wait, what is happening? But either way, people get really excited because it's unexpected, and I'm essentially like a photo booth, but I'm a human person who is drawing on the spot. It's very instant gratification while still being custom and like handmade, like something, everybody likes something that's handmade. And because my drawing style is so simple and I've been drawing butts for so many years, it only takes a couple minutes per butt. Mm-hmm. And depending on what people are wearing, it's kind of fun to get some of those details in there as well. But at weddings especially, it's like a feeding frenzy where people are like, oh my God, you know, and it's just like storming the zone. And then there's a big line and it's back to, it's like the work is like start to finish. There's no breaks, basically.
Yeah.
It's a busy business for me when I'm there.
Yeah. How fun. And then people just, they take them home, right? Like,
Yep. They great. Get to take them home and enjoy them right away. They don't have to wait for anything. So that's cool too for me, because I don't have to scan them or digitize anything. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a piece of paper. It's like, it's yours now. You can frame it. You can put it on the fridge. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah. That is, it's because I've hired like the photo magnet guy, right?
Uh-huh.
Like takes photographs, and then there's the magnet board on the way out. That's a very like Jewish summer camp hire, I think. And I'm going to a wedding. I'm officiating a wedding in a couple of weeks where they hired a magician
to do that's cool.
Close-up magic and work the reception doing close-up magic, which I'm very excited for too. So awesome. I think you have such a fun and different offering. It's nice. It's different than a, right, like photo booths start to feel like very same, you know? And
so. Yeah. And once you go to, once people start getting married a lot and you go to all your friends' weddings, mm-hmm. most of them have a photo booth, or they did for, I mean, I feel like when I went to weddings, like pre-COVID, I feel like every single one I went to,
yeah,
there was a photo booth. And now I feel like there's just been more variety, which is kind of cool, different experiences, but it feels cool to be able to offer something that is unique. And regardless of the guests, like the type of guests you have, I've had people who are older generations, I've had mm-hmm. young kids, I've had everybody in between, and or even people who are like scared and watching from afar with, you know, like uncertain.
Yeah.
By the end of the night, they're in line and they're like, oh, I saw the other ones you drew and it made me feel better that of what you were up to. So I really want to participate. So it's kind of cool to see different types of people react to it, and knowing that it's all about like feeling good and having it be consensual. I'm not like drawing people's butts without permission. Like if you want it, come over. If you're not feeling it, I totally get it. But.
And you're not a caricature artist who finds like your finds and exaggerates your biggest insecurity. Like that's exactly. also not what you're doing.
Totally. And you know, like when people see someone doing live drawing, their minds often go there because they think, oh, you're making a joke or you're exaggerating features. And no, yeah, it's not me. I'm thinking for me to want to go up in front of a stranger and turn around and have your butt facing them, like, and mm-hmm. having them stare and draw, like, it's a very vulnerable position to be in. And I think it's a big responsibility for me because I don't want anyone to feel like I'm laughing or mm-hmm. I'm roasting them or, like trying to make anyone feel worse than they already do. Just, I say that because we're all human and we all are so hard on ourselves regardless of what we look like. And so I really don't want to contribute to people's, perceptions. I want to contribute in a good way, not a bad way.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. So the book, All Butts Are Good Butts, available now. We'll link mm-hmm. to it. I'll link to the bookshop link. Cool. But people in Milwaukee, go to Lion's Tooth Bookstore or order from them online, or anywhere else you can get the book online. If people order from Lion's Tooth, do they have signed copies?
They did. I don't know if they have any more, but I told them I'll come in at any point and, sign more books before you ship them out, or if people want to buy them from there. But yeah, or better yet, request it with your local indie bookshop. Let them know you'd like to buy my book, and then they'll get a copy or two, and maybe other local people, wherever you are, will pick it up. And yeah.
Yeah. In my neighborhood, that is either the bookseller or Women and Children's First.
So awesome. Yeah.
I'm equidistant to two great, actually three. Unabridged, I think, is in Andersonville, too. So many cool indie bookstores on the north side these days. It's nice. So Rachel, your book is what gave us the reason to meet, but you're also here to talk about your favorite thing, which is probably the closest to the title of this podcast I've ever come, which is finding things.
Yes. Yeah.
So you'd sent me a list that was rocks, fossils, beach glass, foraging mushrooms, finding animals, and you said, well, the thing really what they all have in common is that you're finding things out in the world.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm curious, if you time travel to being a little Rachel, mm-hmm. were you a kid who was always bringing treasures in from like the yard?
Yeah, yeah, especially rocks. Rocks have always kind of been my thing, where I would find ones that I thought were interesting or unique and bring them inside. And then later realizing maybe they're just rocks, or maybe I'm like, maybe I should pick a favorite and not be, you know, bringing in all of these rocks and having jars and boxes of them like a hoarder. I've gotten better. I've gotten more specific as I've grown older. But yeah, I have always been kind of like searching on the ground as I go, looking up in the sky, like trying to find things in my environment. Like, I'm definitely an observer wherever I go.
Yeah. And with a dog, you're, you know, I'm a cat person, so cats mean I never have to leave my house. But a dog does mean you have to leave your house and go on walks. And
yes.
And I feel like gets you into your environment a little bit more.
It's so true. It's such a nice excuse to go explore, because it's obviously beneficial for her, but it's great. It's great for me too, to get out of the house, especially working from home and being so isolated as, like, I'm an employee of one, I'm my own boss. Yep. Like, I don't have any coworkers. So, I look forward to my time outdoors, and whether it's like an early morning stroll or midday or later on, there's just always new things going on. And I pride myself in paying attention to some of those things, where I think people have different types of personalities, and some people, you know, are totally oblivious. Like a really, like a hawk could swoop down in front of somebody and they wouldn't even notice. And then I'm like, oh my God, I can see, you know, like,
yeah.
that really excites me to be able to pick up on things that are going on.
Nice. Let's start with rocks. You said you've gotten better about not keeping all of them. I feel like once I got to Chicago and I had a year where I moved three times in a year, I feel like that's when some of those, for me, those collections start. I started to say, like, okay, do I need, what am I doing? But I'm curious about your rock collection today, or what are things you look for in rocks? Are you like collecting all of a particular shape? Is there a type of stone you like? Do you now like limit it only to vacation rocks? What's your rock status?
Good question. It's funny because I've been releasing old rocks back into the wild. I'm at that stage where I'm like, does this bring me joy anymore? You know, like, but what does excite me and what I still do collect are fossils. I find fossils all the time. It's kind of like one of those things where once you find one, it becomes very addictive, and you start noticing patterns on rocks and stones that you're like, wait, is that, you know, coral fossil or honeycomb coral, or all sorts of, like, crinoids are really common around Lake Michigan. And so in recent years, the only stuff I'll take home is if I find a cool fossil, and I even throw some fossils back if I'm like, it's not that big of a chunk, or it's not that impressive. I have other ones at home that are more impressive, and I'm like, I'll leave it. Maybe someone else will find it, or it'll just turn into dust at some point. It's okay.
Yeah.
But fossils, I do have quite a few, and I just am amazed that they exist in on beaches that are, you know, full of garbage or heavily trafficked. And I meet a lot of people who are like, oh, I've never found one. And I'm like, all you got to do is find your first one and you'll find more. You just have to like identify those characteristics. And if you want it, there's plenty more to be found. So
yeah. Yeah. I remember the gravel on our playground growing up had fossilized beads in it, just like mixed in with the pebbles.
Whoa.
And so, or at least we thought they were fossilized beads. Maybe they were a type of an animal too, but
yeah, yeah.
We would sit under the monkey bars and like go through the pebbles on the playground looking for beads, looking for fossilized beads.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't think playgrounds use pebbles as much anymore for the soft landing.
That's true. Now I think that's like rubber, right? They do those weird like melted tire.
Yeah. 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 Now that the decision makers are people with rocks permanently embedded in their knees.
Yeah.
they made a switch.
Yeah, yeah, probably. Yeah.
And alongside of the fossils on the beaches in particular, are those the same beaches where you're finding the beach glass?
Yes. Yeah. And that's another area that I'm like super excited about because one, it's technically trash.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels good, like, removing it from the environment.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of it. There's so much of it. It can be so disguised when it's white or, like, clear, but then because of all the sand tumbling, it almost has, like, a whitish, more opaque look to it. And so it's very gratifying when you find that and you realize, no, it's not just like a white pebble or stone. It's actually glass. Or greens and blues can be really nice. And I've even found like red before.
Wow. Which
was really cool. And purple, like some weird stuff where I'm like, oh, is this like, did this used to be like a vase or some sort of clear glass, but with really pretty color. It's so interesting to like consider all the possibilities of where something came from and how old it is. And you might just have a tiny shard, but it's, yeah, very gratifying to find. And so now I have so many jars full of beach glass. And I want to do something cool with it. I want to look at it all. I'm like, I should make my coffee tabletop be all beach glass or do something where I can.
That would be really cool.
Yes, I have so much of it that I could really do something exciting, like mosaic wise with it. I'm just intimidated because I don't want to destroy the beach glass or destroy a table, but.
Right. You could test it out with like a coaster.
Yeah, exactly. I should do that. Cause I have like lesser beach glass too. You know, I've got it in like variations of ones that I can really, you know, I could really part with, and then other nicer specimens that I'm excited about. But it's cool. It's like, it's interesting when I look at how much I've collected, and it doesn't really, I'm like, did I collect all this? Jeez, you know, like I feel like the pandemic, I really dialed it up where I was pockets full of beach glass every day and collecting a lot. So
what are the typical sizes that you're finding?
It really varies, and it's honestly dependent on what beach I'm at. So some, like I live in Bayview in Milwaukee, which is on the south side of the city. But if you go even further south to Cudahy or South Milwaukee, for whatever reason, there's beaches there with less people visiting them. And especially seasonally, I would say winter into early spring, you can find the best beach glass because there's less people out, and because of with the waves, it just like churns up more. And I found chunks that are like as big as my hand, like smaller.
Wow.
Some with words on it, like Milwaukee. I found with like
that's cool.
Milwaukee something. I don't even know, glass company or. And then lots of smaller ones, but I usually try to just pick up the bigger pieces since the small ones are a bit more annoying to grab.
Right.
Yeah.
Annoying to grab, annoying to get out of your pocket.
Yeah, yeah. It just ends up staying in there and, like, scratching my iPhone at some point.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of how old any of them are? Are these like, five-year-old pieces of glass? Are there ways of aging it, or is it just... it's beautiful and it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I wonder if there is. I definitely have found pieces of glass that, like I mentioned with like the writing on it, where I'm like, these types of things aren't being made right now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it has like whether it's the font or, you know, just like knowing that glass isn't as common.
Right.
For products, especially like larger scale things, everything is plastic now. Just minimal new glass in terms of with writing on it and things. But yeah, I'm definitely no expert in rocks, fossils, or glass. I'm more of just like, oh, this is cool. I'm gonna keep it and look at it, but.
Great.
I thought maybe I would. I have books and things that sometimes I'll crack open if I'm trying to identify something. But yeah, it's more for just the fun and like luck of finding it.
Yeah.
Than studying it.
Yeah. That's cool. And do you, when you're out on the beaches, do you say to yourself, oh, today's a beach glass day or today's a rock day? Or you just find the pretty things you find and you're ambidextrous? That's the wrong word.
I know what you're saying. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I usually am just like open to whatever will happen. Because once my eyes are like pretty well trained now to just find things. So whatever shows itself to me,
then,
you know, I kind of go for that. Like some days are more neat rocks. Like I'll just be in awe of like, wow, today's a really good rock day. I didn't come here looking for rocks necessarily, or same thing with fossils or the beach glass. But and then sometimes it's just a little bit of everything, and sometimes it's just like one thing. Like I'll find a hunk of fool's gold in a rock and I'll just be like, whoa, this is so cool. And like, that's all I find for the day, but it still feels really special and neat that I found a little bit of treasure.
Yeah. I haven't thought about fool's gold in a long time.
Yeah, I thought it was real. I found it like three times before and I lost my mind the first time thinking it was gold. And then I had posted it and someone's like, you have to do a streak test. And I thought, oh, man, I was so convinced this was gold, you know?
Right.
But then it was cool. It was fun to like actually do a streak test and see what color the line was. And then I'm like, okay, it's fool's gold. It's not real. I enjoyed that little moment of thinking I found gold along, you know, Lake Michigan, but the fool's gold, honestly, pretty much equally as cool because, it's just neat.
It's still nice to look at.
Totally. And just cool because if you know, it's not like finding like a big gold thing. It's like a rock that's pretty unassuming looking with a little bit of like gold feature on it. So,
yeah.
That was really cool and just like another reminder that I can find things that I don't expect necessarily. Like that day I didn't set out looking for it and yet I found some and then I found more since then.
Nice. How about foraging mushrooms?
So
I grew up in Indiana. And so I've certainly had seasons where we've gone out morel hunting.
Okay, cool.
So, and also I've told this story on the podcast before. After my sister and I had gone morel hunting with our dad, we were walking around the block eating cinnamon gummy bears and found some toadstools that we were like, great, they're mushrooms. And we sat down and we ate them and they were not for human consumption.
Oh, no.
So our mom got syrup of Ipecac and made sure that it didn't kill us both.
Whoa, that's really scary. Mushrooms are really scary.
Yeah. but luckily we had been eating the cinnamon bears, so she knew that she'd gotten everything out because we had just had red gummy bears.
Okay.
So it was like a clear marker. and then I was off mushrooms for probably 15 years, but now I love them again. So I'm curious what is foraging mushrooms like up in Milwaukee?
It's pretty good. I mean, it's hit or miss. However, the first time I found one and I saw one, I mean, my fear of mushrooms is very real. I think you have to have a healthy respect and fear for mushrooms before you go eating them, because there are so many poisonous mushrooms and there's a lot of look-alike species that if you just assume, which I've actually found, I've found morels before, but I also have found a dune stinkhorn. I don't know if you've heard of those.
No.
I know. It's a really cool name. It's like a name.
Pokemon.
I know. Dune stinkhorn is a very similar to morel looking. I believe that if you were to cut it, it wouldn't be hollow, which is like one of your greatest things with a morel. You cut it and then you look and it's like a hollow shaft.
Okay.
But the dune stinkhorn, I was like eyeing it. It was in someone's yard, like their front yard. And I thought, there's like one morel there. I wonder if they know, blah, blah, blah. But then upon examining it closer, and I have like a mushroom app where I scan. Like I take three different photos, like you do a top, a side, and a bottom. And, you know, the whole app is like, don't eat anything you find based on what we say, just because they don't want to be liable for someone getting sick. But it is a good app to use when you're out hiking or walking around and you're like, is that what I think it is? And then I was like, whoa, this is a dune stinkhorn. This is not a morel. So that was a good reminder of just don't, you know, like it's easy to get really excited, but there's so much nuance with mushrooming. And I've only... Well, I guess I've also found chicken of the woods, those mushrooms before, and like a huge amount of them on a tree, growing off of a tree, which was awesome. Wow.
There's a whole episode of Bob's Burgers about chicken of the woods.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I should watch.
It's a really... You know, there's like mobsters involved in it, like the farmers market mob, like mafia. And they're all out mushroom hunting. And then it's a great episode.
Okay, I'll look it up.
Yeah. what is the app called? Your mushroom app?
That's a good question here. Let's take a look. Picture Mushroom. That's what I use. It's just called Picture Mushroom.
Okay.
And it's kind of cool, too, because then I can actually go through and look at all of the mushrooms that I've snapped pictures of.
Yeah.
So it's nice because it's all there rather than just in your massive catalog of photos and trying to piece together the mushrooms. So,
yeah.
And, yeah, there's different wooded areas in Milwaukee that I go to that have higher concentrations of mushrooms, but also... Yeah, it's again, like once you start noticing them, like I notice them in my neighborhood. I've seen them in my alley. They come back, you know, often in the same areas, which is so cool. So it's like once you find them in a certain patch or park, then go back during their peak time of year and see what's brewing.
And then when you found those chicken of the woods, is that what it was called?
Yes, because there's hen of the woods, but there's also chicken of the woods. And the chicken ones are more yellowish, like gold color. And the hen of the woods mushrooms, I believe, are a little bit more reddish.
Okay. So when you found them, did you forage and cook with them, or did you say, haha, I found them, I could eat them, but I'm gonna pass?
I struggled. I saw them and I was like, this is such a good find. And I was so excited because they're so meaty. They're really such an amazing mushroom.
Right.
So then I did return back with a knife and with a paper bag, and I did cut off some. I left some on the tree so that way I didn't like completely remove it.
Yeah.
But this is embarrassing to admit, I was very grossed out by them when they were just chilling in my house. I was like, mushrooms are aliens, because the bag started, it got like grease, because things were happening. Obviously they're living things. And then when they are like releasing their spores. And I was just like, I had some regret. I was like, maybe I shouldn't have picked these. I still ate them, but I don't have like a deep fryer, and I didn't like properly cook them like the way a restaurant is going to give you like chicken nuggets. But it was a weird experience having them, because with morels, whenever I've found morels, even if it's like two, I'll prepare them right away. I just like prepare them and eat them. I don't just like let them hang out. But I had those other ones in my kitchen for a while, and I was pretty weirded out by what was going on. And I'm like, you know what, next time I see
by the those, continued activity of the chicken.
Yes. I was like, you know what, I think I might just let these guys continue on in the woods or on their tree, and just leave it for nature or somebody else who's going to enjoy them more.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, at some level, mushrooms are sort of like the octopus of the plant world, right?
Yes. Yeah. They really are incredibly smart, sophisticated, mysterious things. And yeah, the more I've learned about them and how they like communicate and work with tree networks and decomposition and their spores, there's some weirdness going on there that I'm like, it's not as appetizing in some ways.
Yeah. And then you also have finding animals.
I do, yes. Well, I'm so excited because I have a family of foxes living behind me right now. And I see them every single day. I feel so beyond lucky. I'm trying to really savor this time period, because I know it's not going to last.
Right.
But I have close encounters with foxes every single day, and I'm just in awe of how beautiful and wild they are, but that they've adapted. I mean, they've forcibly adapted to urban environments.
Right.
But it's three pups and a mom, and I've had two pups, while I'm walking my dog, two pups run right by us playing. I've had the mom stop and look at me and my dog, approach us slightly, not in a scary way, but in a curious way. I've seen the foxes on the roofs of my neighbor's garages that I'm just like in the kitchen making coffee, and I look out the window and I see foxes on roofs. I'm just like, this is so cool. I feel like I have to pinch myself, because prior to this period of time where they decided to make a den behind my house, I once saw a fox. I saw a fox once in far western Illinois on like a cabin friend trip once. months, and yeah. we were all losing our minds, looking out the window, just like, I can't believe we could see a fox right now. It's so rare to see a fox.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that I would never see one again unless I was staying in like a very wooded area similar mm-hmm. to what had happened before. So having this completely different, like very close, common sighting.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's so cool. And I'm just all the time watching out for them at their different times of day, their mm-hmm. different activities, paying attention to other animals that are interacting with them.
Yeah.
And also, you know, seeing how like my dog is like watching or barking or like looking mm-hmm. at these wild animals. It's super cool.
Oh, that is so neat. And you're getting to watch the pups grow up over the summer.
I am. And it's like, I'm so attached because I'm constantly worrying about the pups. Like,
yeah.
Are they okay? Are they eating okay? Are they like, you know, because there's so much on the line. It's so hard.
Right.
Luckily, there are a lot of small critters around here that they're able to survive and thrive. But you know, there's a lot of cars. Like there's every night I think, right. Oh my gosh, they're crossing really busy streets and people drive and they're not yeah. looking for anything. They're not like watching for wild animals or thinking about driving cautiously. I feel right. like people in general just don't really drive cautiously anymore. So just the concern of that, or even someone calling it in to, you know, the city, or having them relocated or re-released somewhere else. And
yeah,
you know, it hasn't come to that yet. I've talked with many of the neighbors. They're all aware of what's going on. People are being very aware with their cats and their pets and things. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's just like an acknowledgement that we've pushed out our wildlife because of us taking over right. a lot of their land, and that they yeah. need to adapt, and they have. And even if it's a sliver of green grass and trees, that they're like, this is going to work for now. So,
yeah. So do they burrow? Like, do they?
They do.
Yeah.
They have a cool. den. They have a den, and it's it's really funny because there's just like one day there was a mound of dirt outside of this kind of sloped wooded area behind our mm-hmm. house, and we're like, oh, maybe the people who live next to that are gonna do something. They're doing landscaping uh-huh. things. And then it was like every day the dirt was changing, and then there was a really deep hole that we were like, I don't think that's a raccoon, or I don't think that's a possum. Yeah. It just started evolving, and then we would start having sightings where the fox or multiple foxes would be standing above the hole and digging or bringing things there. There would be, be lots of carnage, lots of blood and stink and, you know, carcasses, things going on, to where we were like, holy crap, there's like, we need like a game camera. I wish I could see what they were up to all the time, because it's like a nature show happening behind us. But yeah, little by little, we started noticing things and kind of picking up on what was going on. Or even crows, like the neighborhood crows
right.
are so angry at the foxes that during like between the 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. hour, the crows will just come and squawk at their den. And I think it's because they're mad that they don't have any stuff to eat these days, because the crows used to pick up anything that was like dead or small stuff. And the crows will just caw. They'll be right outside there and just...
Wow.
Just like the inner workings of things going on, where before I heard that, I'd just be like, oh, what are the crows doing? Blah, blah, blah. But it's like, no, there's like territorial stuff going on here. And these foxes have efficiently taken over this whole area that, you know, other animals were depending on small critters and or even just like trash or things that you know, end up being out that animals do eat.
Right.
These foxes are cleaning up the neighborhood. So
yeah. That's, I'm sad for the crows, but happy for you.
I know. You it's know? Hard. It is hard because it really highlights how brutal nature is in every sense, because even in our backyard, I have had so many, like, I don't even know if it's called litters of bunnies. So many bunnies call our yard a home, and luckily we have like a very fenced off yard, so the foxes haven't found a way to come in yet. But you know, we find dead bunnies all the time by the den, and it's heartbreaking because I love my baby bunnies, and I just want everybody to like live in happiness together. But I realize that that's just not how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a lot of, I live across the street from a big park.
Okay.
And so bunnies on this side of this neighborhood in Chicago are everywhere. And last night I was just sitting, or a couple nights ago, sitting in the lawn and watching this rabbit just jumped out from its den or wherever it typically lives, and it was looking at me, and it was like, oh, am I scared of you or not? And it would run up the gangway and then run back and then run into the bushes and then run back out in the yard, and just like couldn't quite decide where it wanted to hang out. But it's real active, and so I'll take my cat out. He'll come and hang out in the yard with me for some enrichment time, but he's not a hunter. He's always been an indoor cat. He just, you know, likes to smell the garden. And he'll, when he sees a rabbit or a rat, he'll, you know, instinct kicks in, but he doesn't know what to do with the instinct. So he'll just he's never caught anything, thank God.
Yeah.
Or gotten even close. 'Cause he thinks it's going to be a toy. So when it keeps moving, he's very confused.
that's really cute. It's kind of similar with my dog. She likes to chase, but she's like a collie mix. So it's more about the herding aspect than it is about actually catching. And she loses interest pretty quick. She's like kind of like into it. And then she just is like, even from the fox, sometimes we'll see the fox in the morning and she'll look. And then she'll just be like, eh, I want to sniff over here. And I'm like, there's a fox right here. It's amazing. And she's like, eh, I barked at it yesterday. It's fine. It's not scared of us.
It's not stealing your dog's food, so your dog is not too worried.
She's like, whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been really, in the last couple of years, I guess it's probably since the pandemic when people had to find new hobbies. A lot of my friends kind of, in line with the memes, got into bird watching.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I, so far, I'm really enjoying the Instagram feeds of my friends who are into bird watching. Because I haven't quite entered that era of my late 40s yet, but I can tell I'm close.
Yeah.
It's coming. It's on its way.
Yeah, that's so funny because my brother, during the pandemic, got really into bird watching, and I have a couple friends too. And I'm like, that's totally within my scope of things that I'm interested in. I just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
I sometimes will see a bird that I'm like, whoa, what is that? Or I'll just hear their song and think, oh, that's a different bird. I should look that up. But I haven't gone into full birder mode, but there's always time. We've got time.
Yeah. There's an app, I think it's called Merlin, that is like Shazam for bird calls.
Oh, cool. Merlin.
So you can record it, and it will help you identify the bird based on the call.
That's awesome. Yeah, because it is hard when you're like, how do I Google that?
Yeah.
Like a bird that
tweet,
goes
tweet, tweet.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Amazing. Well, Rachel, it's been so fun getting to spend this morning with you talking about finding treasures and your new book. Is there anything I haven't asked you about finding things out in the world or butts that you want to make sure to mention?
so. Yeah, I feel like kind of just what we talked about earlier, where I think the only thing I didn't say was that I'm an observer, I'm also just a people watcher. And so maybe that's where my drawing butts really came, because I was like, it's fun to look at butts, and and then I can draw them. But yeah, the it's just, there's so much treasure to be found, whether it's just visually taking something in or actually finding a specimen or an object that feels really good. But I think it really adds to my life when I'm able to take in what's happening around me. And so it's been really fun to talk about all those different things.
Awesome. Where can people find you on the internet?
Yes, I am on Instagram and I'm on TikTok. My pages are just under Rad Illustrates. And I also have an online store, which has other information about what events I'm going to be doing and the book. And that's radillustrates.com.
Outstanding. People can find Finding Favorites on Instagram and Twitter, Finding Faves Pod. You can send me an email if you want. It's still a new email address and I haven't memorized it, so let me find what that is. Send me an email with feedback about episodes or guests that you would like to hear on at findingfavoritespodcast@gmail.com. And please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or Good Pods. Those are the two places that actually take reviews. So please leave a 5-star review, recommend this to your friends. That's how we'll keep the podcast growing. So Rachel, thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Yeah, thank you very much. I had a great time.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.